literally how much money in the bank do you have?
About 500 quid. When you get a good deal, the investors will come.
I mean, from their point of view, it must be what? About 60% ROI, something like that.
Is that a true story?
It's a true story. Hey, I'm Russell Leeds.
I'm Ricky Mandel.
And welcome to the Property Investors Podcast. On this week's show, how to buy your first property. Actually, out of interest, Rick, what was the first property that you actually bought?
The first property that we bought, it was actually a buy, refurbish, refinance project. That it was an investment property that was run down, needed a refurb. We bought it for 150, refurbed it, and then refinanced it at 230.
So you bought it for 150?
Yep.
Whereabouts was this property?
This is in Northamptonshire.
In Northamptonshire, okay. And was it worth 150 at the time? Was it
condition it was in.
So was it in bad condition?
Yeah, it needed a refurb. And then once it was done up, the end value was 230.
Okay.
So if it was in
bought it for 150?
Yeah.
How much did you spend doing it up?
30.
30 grand. So you're sort of 180,
yeah.
£180,000 in. And then by the time you did that, it was worth 230. At which point you then refinanced it?
Refinanced.
So did you leave a little bit of
money? A little bit of money in, not a lot. You know, it's not a lot of money.
And when you bought it, did you have a lot of money at the time to invest, or were you...
Yeah, I just won the lottery.
Oh, and... nice. There you go, guys. You heard it here first.
I had no money. Well, I had no money. And we used different tools. We raised a bit of finance. We used investors' money.
All right, so let's go through the process then, because... Yeah. I mean, for someone who's buying their... I'll talk about mine in a bit, but the first property I bought, I also had no money either. But you're in a situation... How old were you at the time?
I was 26 years ago. 25?
You were 25. So you're 25 years old. What were you doing for a job?
DJ.
You're a DJ.
Yeah.
You were a fat DJ, weren't you?
I was a fat DJ.
Right. So you're a fat DJ. You've got... Literally, how much money in the bank did you have in total?
About 500 quid.
Okay, so you got 500 quid. What made you think I'm going to go and buy a 150 grand property that needs 30 grand spending on it?
Well,
like most people would just be thinking, I don't know, maybe I'm going to go and do a deal selling.
Yeah.
Or what made you think? Had you done anything previously?
No. What happened was, I thought property was for people that had loads of money, smart people, rich people. And then I came to a crash course and my eyes were opened up to, you know, raising finance, doing joint ventures, different creative ways to do it. Then I went on some advanced training with Samuel and yourself and the team, and I was going through the training. I was like, hold on a minute. You don't need anything to really do this business. All you need is a fire in your belly and the knowledge to be able to do it. So once I've been through the training, that's what made me think, okay, this is possible, I can do it, I know how to do it. Another thing that helped was seeing other people do it before me. So I was watching Winners on a Wednesday, where I'm seeing hundreds of people doing it without money, and I'm thinking, well, at some point, if it didn't work, there'll be a point where it was like, right, there's no more Winners on a Wednesday. And, you know, there's only a handful of people that can do it. But when it's hundreds of people, it's like, this has to work. So it was a mixture of the belief, the knowledge, the support, the training that, you know, gave me that belief to be able to go out there and do it. But before I'd done any of that, I didn't think it was possible.
No. So how did you actually find the property? Like, was it just on Rightmove? Was it from a deal seller? Like, how did that come
Yeah,
out?
No, it was on Rightmove. And
Just went on Rightmove?
Went on Rightmove.
Saw a property that looked in disrepair?
Yeah, I mean, there's different, you know, things that we do using filtered words, keywords.
Go on, explain.
So on Rightmove, you can use, there's a keyword box that you can put in keywords. So, for example, if you type in modernization into the keyword box, it will come up with all of the ones that have in need of, well, have the word modernization in the description. So it will come up with all of the refurb properties, really. So keywords, ringing agents as well. I mean, this particular one was just on Rightmove under modernization. But
you just went on Rightmove, put in modernization. This one popped up.
Yeah.
Northamptonshire, that's not a million miles away from where
no,
you live, is
no.
it? How far back?
About half hour.
Half an hour. Okay, so were you generally looking around the area that you live in?
Yeah.
All right. So you found the deal and you thought, all right, that looks like a good deal. But, dun, 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 big problem, I have no money.
Yeah.
Right, so what was the process then? Did you... Because it's kind of a chicken and egg situation, isn't it, with this? I hear a lot of people say, I've got a deal. I've got this deal. And now they desperately need investors because they've put an offer on a deal and now they need investors. Or you have other people that go and try and find investors, but they haven't got a deal. Right, so which kind of came first for you? Was it the deal or the investors, or how did that work?
We were speaking to investors and building a list of investors that we could market to raise finance from whilst we were trying to find the deal. But what often happens is when you get a good deal, the investors will come. If you've got a good deal, I think it's easier to get investors once you've got a good deal. But it also helps having a good network around you. You know, if you're around people that are investors looking to invest in property deals, then it makes it easier then because you've already got a network of people to reach out to. So
would you say then the order should be, if someone was starting from scratch, build your network, get people around you, not necessarily that are ready to invest. You don't even pitch on investing, but you've got people around you that you know are kind of interested in investing.
Yeah.
But so that when a deal does come, bang, you've got this big pool of people that you can approach.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So where did you, I'm assuming you built it up within Samuel's Academy.
Yeah.
Yeah, it okay. Was. So you had a big pool of people, you found the deal, then what happened?
Then we got the deal together, got all of the information, made sure it would work. And then it was quite clever actually, because we got shown on the training how to do something called an if would offer. So what that means is basically, rather than putting in a formal offer, because once you put in an offer, you've only got maybe 48 hours before they're really, you know, on your case about it, or you'll probably lose the deal. So we put in an if would offer, which is where we said, if we were to offer, you know, 180 or 170, would the landlord accept? And if they say yes, then we'll say, all right, well, let's just crunch some more numbers and we'll get back to you, you know, over the next day. And in that time, we'll then go out and speak to the investor, say, right, we've got this deal, this is the purchase price, because we know we can get it for that much. Then when we've got the investor, then we'll put in the formal offer and we're all good to go without any delays in the first few days. So that's the way that we got it moving quick, was if we'd offered, when we knew what they would accept, then we found the investor, and then we put in the formal offer.
So what was it on the market for?
So it was listed for 160.
So it was listed for 160?
Yeah.
And you knocked it down 10 grand.
Yeah, 150. Yeah.
Okay. And why 150? Or was that just what you thought you'd get away with?
Well, no, because for 150, that was a number that we needed to get it for the deal to work and have a bit of margin in there.
Okay. Yeah. And you think it's probably worth about that?
Yeah.
In its current state?
Yeah.
Okay, cool. So you've got the deal. You've negotiated it. Here's another question that a lot of people ask, especially when they're doing buy refurbishing finances, especially when it's their first deal. You mentioned that it cost you 30 grand to do the property up.
Yeah.
How did you know that it was going to cost you 30 grand, or did you not? Was it?
Well, it was my first one, so I guess my confidence wasn't as it was now. But I was fairly confident because on the training, we got shown how much refurbs were. In fact, we got given a list of materials and stuff, you know, this is how much new fire doors are, this is how much it is to rewire, this is how much it is for a boiler. You know, we got contacts of people basically given to us of, you know, distributors of different products and materials. So it made it easier then, because what I would have done before, I would have gone around and been like, oh my goodness, I don't know how much this is going to cost. Maybe got a builder to go around with me, you know, trying to guess everything, researching it all. But I just went around.
Basically, just methodically had a list of all the.
Yeah, there's a checklist. Yeah. There, right? This, how much this is, this, how much.
Okay.
And then over time, it gets easier, of course, because you get more experience. But it helped having some sort of, you know, sheet with pricings of stuff on there.
So, is there anything in particular that you look out for when you're looking at these sort of properties now? Like, could be a red flag that someone might miss that could be a very, very costly? For example, if there was structural problems. You know, someone might miss that. Like, and then let's say that they thought they found a great deal, but there were structural problems, and suddenly it's not 30 grand, it's 70 grand.
Yeah.
And now you've lost money on it's worse than just buying a property.
Yeah, I think structural issues, subsidence. You know, we always stand back and look at the house and make sure it's not lopsided. One of the big ones is rot.
Mm.
You know, and how do you tell if there's rot? Well, if you kind of, not jump, but if you go up and down on the floor, if it's a little bit spongy, it could be a sign that there's rot. But you won't know until you pull up the floorboards anyway, but it's a good telltale sign. Damp, looking out for damp. Some of these things are good problems to have because it helps with negotiations. Always looking at the roof. So a lot of people go into houses and they just go inside, look around and think, yeah, cool, this looks good. All right, well, what about the roof? Because if the roof is missing tiles, that could be a big problem. I guess one of the biggest ones is structural damage, structural issues. Another common one that we see, and by the way, all of this I didn't know before. You know, it's only after the training where it's like, it's common sense now. It's the first things that we look at. But some people, there's a lot of properties on the market that need refurbs that aren't, they're not non-standard construction. And that can be a bit of a problem because it's harder to get lending on non-standard construction. So what some people do is they'll go out, they'll put an offer on, they'll buy a non-standard construction building with their cash, they'll refurb it. But then when they go to refinance it, they struggle to get lending because it's non-standard construction. Then they'll try and sell it and no one will buy it because they can't get a mortgage because it's non-standard construction. So there are a few small things to look out for that you have to be aware of. Otherwise, you will end up losing money.
Yeah, and don't be afraid to go over the top with your due diligence and checking
stuff out.
I remember my grandparents telling me, I thought it was an interesting story, when they sold one of their houses years ago. And this isn't the sort of due diligence we do, but it shows the lengths that this buyer went to. So the buyer said to them, I'm very interested in your house, but for me it's very important. It's quiet at night. Is it quiet at night? And they said, yeah, it's quiet at night. And he said, do you mind if I come round on Friday night and just sit in the lounge all evening just to see how quiet it is? And they were like, yeah, sure. So he came round and they all just sat in silence all evening. What the heck?
Is that a true story?
A true story. And then at 12 o'clock at night, he went, yeah, I'm satisfied. That's quite enough. I'll put you...
What but the hell?
Now, it sounds crazy, but don't you admire his due diligence? The work and effort? Because obviously it's important to him that it's quite...
Not really, no. Yeah, I mean, first of all right, if it was half an hour, fair enough, maybe. Even if it was half an hour, what? Has he even bought the house yet?
Well, no, he wanted to check this before he bought the house.
And your grandparents let him?
Yeah. Got the sale, though.
But what if he didn't get the sale? It would have been like, oh, what a waste of an evening with a stranger sat in the living room in dead silence. What? No. I don't know. That's strange.
That is strange. But do you not admire the guy's due diligence? And the other thing is, if you're worried about asking questions or doing a bit of, getting a builder to go around, etc., just remember this story of this guy.
Hold on a minute. I admire the, not the due diligence. I admire
the balls.
Yes, and also the commitment.
Yeah.
But if he's checking for the noise levels, it must be for him, not an investment property.
So yeah, it was, yeah.
Well, no, put your money into an investment.
Yeah, but what I'm talking about is I said it's not relevant for us because we wouldn't mind, but the level of attention to detail, the how bothered he is.
You can't beat it. Hats off to him.
Yeah.
The grandparents, on the other hand, you're playing at half an hour, fair enough.
But you say that, but it got them a sale, right? You know, some people take, years to sell a house.
Sitting there with a stranger just in silence all evening, what?
You'd love it.
Till midnight as well. Well, hold on a minute, I'm going to bed now. 10 o'clock.
Out.
Yeah.
All right, so back to you anyway. So those are your red sort of flags. So you priced it up, you're roughly 30 grand. All right, great. I suppose that's only half the job done, though. You found the deal. It's a good deal. You found the deal. You've priced it up. You've made sure it's stacked. And I do think that finding deals is a very, very important skill. But you've got no money. So you're halfway there.
Yeah.
So what were your next steps? What exactly did you do to raise the rest of the finance?
So what I did was I reached out to investors. And I said, basically, I've got this deal. Sent out an email. Got this deal.
So you've got a list of investors that you've from your network, we talked about earlier, that are on your emails. You just emailed all of them.
Yeah.
All right. And so what did
I've
you
got,
say?
I've got this deal. Not looking to sell it. I'm looking to partner with people on it. If you're interested and want to have a conversation,
then, you know, give me a call. Slightly different to DealSource in the way that you raise finance, you know, the way that we market the deal. With DealSource, and we do it a slightly different way, with raising finance, it's not, I'm not trying to, well, the deal's not going to sell quick because we're not selling it. You know, we're not trying to create this, you know, urgency of training investors. What we're doing here is, first of all, what's very different is I'm about to partner with someone on a property deal, so I need to qualify them, make sure it's going to be a good fit, talk about exit strategies, you know, the structure in the joint venture. So, you know, I probably had a conversation with maybe 10 different investors, spoke to all of them. Some of them, it weren't going to be suitable for what they wanted or needed. Some of them, you know, didn't meet the criteria of what they wanted. Some of them, you know, just weren't a good fit for us to be working on a deal together. But there was one person who, it, you know, fit what they wanted. They would have been, well, they were happy with what they got from it. They were a good fit for the property, good fit for us as a business. So we partnered with them. And the others, it's not saying, no, we don't want to do business. He's saying this one, you know, on both sides to agree, it probably isn't the best one right now for everyone to do. So that's what we did. We email blast, filtered through investors, found someone that it would work for, that we could work with, and then raised the finance.
Brilliant.
Had contracts in place, which was helpful actually because...
So did you raise the finance all off one person?
Yeah.
And what did you give them? What in return, like... Because obviously I'm assuming they left some of their money in the deal.
Yeah, they left a bit. So, we're going to go into a bit of detail now. So we done all of the work. They put the money in. We done all of the work. When we refinanced...
When you say we, is that you and Pez?
No. It was a family business.
Okay.
We done all of the work. And once we'd refinanced, they got their money back. Then they got 100% of the... There was only a little bit of money left in for them. So the rest of the cash flow from the rent, they got the profits until they had their money back. And then we split the profits 50-50.
So they got all the money?
Yeah.
Until they'd been paid fully back?
Yeah.
Okay. So they got the refinance money, and then they carried on getting the money from the rent until they'd been paid back?
Yeah.
That sounds fair.
And then we split 50-50.
So from their point of view, it was all their money, all money back out. Yeah. How long did it take them to get paid all their money back?
What, as in, every single penny?
Every single penny, yeah.
From start to finish. Well, it was 6 month refurb, 8 months we refinance. Is that just under a couple of years, year and a half?
Year and a half. Okay, so put the money in, all the money back in a year and a half from then on. Have you still own this same property today?
Yeah.
And how long ago was this?
This was 6 years ago.
And how much are they making a month now from that? From
they're their making 450, something like that, 400, 450.
Got all the money back?
Yeah.
I mean, from their point of view, it must be, what, about 60% ROI, something like that?
Oh, without a calculator, I couldn't tell you. But it's a good ROI.
Yeah. And from your point of view, so no money
brilliant,
down deal.
No money down.
So do you now own the property 50-50 with the JV partner?
Yeah, 50-50 in a limited company.
6 years. So it must have gone up in value as well in that time as well.
Yeah, it probably... Whoa, it's a good... Actually, I need to check that. It'll be close in the next couple of years to maybe doubling. Maybe.
Yeah. And I'm assuming you just set up a limited company together and bought it like that. So do you have an exit strategy, like who gets to decide, for example, I'm assuming that you've got, although you own 50-50, you've got the controlling shares.
Yeah.
So if you wanted to sell the property, you'd be able to do that.
Yeah.
Whereas they wouldn't. So I suppose you've probably got no plans to sell it though?
No plans to sell it. No, we're just going to get, what's the point in selling the golden egg? Golden goose. Yeah.
You would sell the golden egg.
It's
the golden goose.
The golden, why would you sell the golden goose?
Yeah.
You know, if it's just giving you cash flow every month, it would be silly. You know, but, you know, you don't know. Situations may change and who knows.
So if buying your first property and you don't have it, I mean, if you're buying your first property and you do have money, I suppose you could do the exact same as what you've talked about, but just use your own money.
Yeah.
If you had 100 grand in the bank.
Well, you could do, but...
If you're pulling the money out within a year...
Well, yeah, you could do, yeah. Some people...
Or you could do both.
Or you could do both. Raise finance. The only problem with using your own money all the time is at some point you'll run out. If you're looking to do maybe a couple of deals, you know, if you're a bit of experience and you're looking to move quick, if you want to do... There's only so much money you've got. So, yeah, you can do that, but I would also know how to raise finance as well.
Yeah. The other thing I've always found is when raising finance personally, it's a lot easier to raise finance when you do have money.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when you don't have any money, the first deal I did, again, I was a bit luckier than you in a way. So I hadn't had the training like you had because Samuel wasn't running training or anything back then. But I borrowed the money similar to you. So I got a mortgage for 90% of it. And then I needed a 10% deposit and I borrowed the money for an investor. It wasn't anything clever like yours. It was just a 10% fixed return for the investor. It's a very cheap property though. So it was only like a 70 grand property. So I only needed about 10 grand. It's now gone up in value. It's worth about 120, but it was just to get myself on the ladder, I suppose. And then the rental income paid off the mortgage, paid off the interest to the investor, and it gave me a small profit. I think I was only making about 150 quid a month or something on top of that. But it was enough to make the deal worthwhile.
Yeah.
And over the years, I paid the investor off, which is great. It's gone up in value. So it was a good deal. It wasn't anything as exciting as yours. But mine was someone that had lent money to Samuel beforehand. And he'd sort of done that. And then they said to me, oh, by the way, if you're ever looking, we're happy to lend you the money at the same deal.
Yeah.
So I was like, brilliant. But it was all set up for me quite nicely, really. So it wasn't as difficult. But similar process of borrowing the money to get on the ladder.
Yeah.
I do think, if I was doing it again, I mean, I was only like 20 probably at the time. I had no money or anything. I had no experience. If I was doing it again, I would definitely do it more like how you've done it. Definitely more the buy, refurbish, refinance route. I think that is definitely the best strategy for getting your first property and then borrowing the money to do that. What do you think about, if you were getting started from scratch now looking to buy, would you recommend people do things like rent to rent and deal selling first or go straight in? And what did you do?
Well, no, I went with deal sourcing and rent to rent and stuff first, but I was open to everything. Because you don't want to miss an opportunity.
Yeah.
You don't want to leave money on the table because you don't know the other strategy.
So did you source deals similar to this before?
Yeah.
Okay.
Which also makes it easier to raise the finance.
It does. A lot easier. Because then you're not starting from scratch.
Yeah.
You've got something. And you've got some credibility. Yourself as well.
Yeah. Because you know that you're selling good deals. So then at that point, it's like, well, why am I taking on some of these myself?
Yeah. What do you think of these new mortgages? I know that they're very hard to get, but these new mortgages that are like 99% mortgages that have just come out, do you think that is an absolute... Because I've heard people criticising them for the interest rates and also the fact that you've got to have brilliant credit. So they're not available to everyone. But do you think... I think they're fantastic. What do you think? 99% mortgage. Would you buy... It's obviously you've... You're very leveraged.
Yeah, you're highly leveraged.
But you're no more leveraged than we were with our deals, where we were 100%,
yeah, true. 100% that is leveraged. True. That is true. I haven't looked or researched into it enough yet to be able to give you a definitive answer.
But on the basis of things, you think they sound good?
I think they sound good. You know.
So what would be your top tips if someone was looking to get into property, maybe doesn't have the money, or has got five, ten grand or something saved, which is probably the position most people are in. Would you say... just go for it?
Well, no, I wouldn't say just go for it. That would be silly.
So what would your advice be?
I would say, firstly, get trained, get educated. You know, if you want to be a pilot, you go to flying school. If you want to be an electrician, you learn how to be an electrician first.
At electrician school.
So get trained, get educated, and know what you're doing. Second thing is get around people that are looking to invest, that are in the property industry, in the property world. So you surround yourself and you're in that environment. And thirdly, once you've got the knowledge and you're around that, you know, environment and you've got support with you, then take action.
Yeah. And am I right in thinking that coming up very soon, you are running, along with Samuel, a virtual crash course that people can attend from home?
Yeah.
And tell me a bit about that.
The virtual crash course is, what happened was Samuel and myself, our whole team were getting bombarded with messages with people saying, I'd love to come to a crash course. Can you live stream it? And in the end, Samuel was just like, you know what? We're going to live stream it. So we do it from the comfort of your own home, and we go through these strategies We go through buy, refurbished finance, we go through rent to rent, we go through service accommodation, deal sourcing. And the good thing is you can do it from wherever you are in the world. Doesn't matter where you are. It's all virtual. It's a day with us. The date for the next one, if you head to our website, because the date off my head, I don't...
I'll put a link for the date. But, yeah. I'll put a link below. Yeah,
off my head, I don't know. It's, I think we've got a few in the pipeline. Okay. Which are on the website. So click the link. There's a few dates you can choose from. So yeah, that's what I tell you to get booked on. I mean, that's £1.
So it's £1. That's for a whole day.
Yeah.
With you and Samuel teaching these strategies in detail, how to get started, everything you need to know to get started.
Yeah.
Sounds awesome, man. All right, well, guys, thank you very much for watching. I'm Russell Leeds.
I'm Ricky Mandel.
And we'll see you next week.